Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Educational Group. My name is Kaden Behan, your host. Excuse me. Still slightly sick, but getting better, thankfully. Today's show will be on sex education part 2 in public schools. But before we begin, we have some announcements as always. Dear homeschool and charter school families, the New Heights Educational Group Resource and Literacy Center is offering its bi-weekly enrichment day classes started Friday, October 11th, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., and these classes will be held in the Science at the Zion Lutheran Church. Please note that the classes are not religion-based, so most families want there to be one. We held a planning meeting on Friday, October 4th, 2013, and there will be additional planning meetings for future classes if you're interested in establishing one. Parents and students are required to participate in these classes and to help with the planning of them. Enrichment Day Co-op classes are underway, and so far we are offering a culinary class, a Dr. Seuss class, a science class, and are open to more suggestions for future classes. Students are invited to not only attend, but to participate in instructing some of the classes. If you're interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us at ASAP@newheightseducation@yahoo.com or visit our website at www.newheightseducation.org. Or feel free to call our number at 419-786-0247. Also, I do apologize. I think my voice may sound a little bit low today. I had a bad cough the other day, and I think it might have made my voice a little bit less strong, but hopefully you can still hear relatively well. Additionally, for another announcement, we have a Women in Business 2013 award that we're very proud to announce that we won. The Organization of the Year, Government Organization of the Year, Bronze Award. Organization of the Year, Government for Government and Nonprofit Silver Award, and Pamela Clark, Founder and Director of New Heights Educational Group, won the Female Executive of the Year for Government or Nonprofit Organizations. There were more than 1,200 applicants from 18 nations that were nominated, and we are truly honored to have been chosen this year and extra honored to receive recognition from Women in Business for 2 years in a row. Again, new student advisory group officers were voted in by student members during the November 11th meeting. The president is still needed. The vice president is still needed. All youth will be working together until these two officers are voted in. Sadia Ejaz is the secretary. Desiree McMillan is the treasurer and news reporter. Giselle May Burns is historian. Catherine Spangler is recreation leader and refreshment coordinator. And Kyler Spangler is recreation leader, recreation activity leader. So today, we've had a couple of breaks since we last talked about sex education in public schools, and where we left off was mainly highlighting the issues that have arisen because of sex education and the development of new ways of trying to teach sex education, whether it be abstinence only or in more comprehensive programs, how that affects the outcome of the effectiveness of sex education, so whether or not these tools are effective in keeping the STD rate down among young adults, keeping pregnancy down among young adults. And so just to highlight a little bit from the last show that we had on this topic, many of the issues that surrounded this have arisen mainly from the conflict between pro-abstinence only education supporters and more comprehensive programs that teach about different ways of having safe sex and using birth control and other methods of staying safe while having sex, and also teaching about pregnancy, Planned Parenthood, and things like that. So the main issues have arisen between those two groups, with abstinence-only supporters being the more dominant, I suppose, in the argument. And so additionally, with those issues, is devising a strategy for teaching sex education so that both parents and students, students are getting the best education that they can, parents are satisfied, and that it doesn't offend particular parents or familial interpretations of what is right to teach their children and what's not. So we were talking a little bit about that, and then some other issues that had to do with the teachers themselves, which is lack of training for teachers, lack of support for teachers. A lot of times teachers have to, it's very risky teaching sex education just because of the possibility of perhaps offending students in class or getting in trouble by the parents upon teaching something that perhaps maybe is not necessarily viewed as PC. So we talked a lot about that. And so in this show, I want to talk a little bit more, not about the issues, but addressing the issues. And so we're going to talk about addressing the problems and what makes effective sex education. So again, this information was taken Patricia Donovan from the GuteMonster.org, which is a national sex education. I have just been perpetually sick, and hopefully soon won't be. So that way, our listeners will have a better time listening to me speak. I do apologize if it does not sound very, very good, but. Like I said, from Patricia Donovan of the Guttmacher Institute for Sex Education and Public Health. And we're going to begin with addressing the problem. Sex education proponents point to several steps that would address concerns about teacher preparedness and perceptions of lack of community support. These include improving professional training. Undergraduate institutions should require prospective teachers in certain disciplines, such as health education, to take both subject matter and methodology courses on sexuality, STD, and HIV education, say sex education advocate. In addition, they say all states should have or adopt certification requirements for teachers of sex education, HIV, and STD education. They should also require that school districts do more to facilitate staff development. In 1997, the Hawaii legislature adopted a resolution along these lines, encouraging the State Department of Education to study the feasibility of requiring all health teachers to be certified to teach health, to take 5 continuing education classes in specified health-related areas, including teenage pregnancy and STD and HIV prevention, and to be evaluated along with their curriculum by students. Also, established local advisory committees. Proponents of comprehensive sex education suggest that communities create local advisory committees composed of parents, religious leaders, medical professionals, and other community leaders to review and approve curricula, books, and other materials being proposed for use in sexuality education courses. Some states already require that such a committee be established. An advisory committee builds support for the program, explains Patricia Nichols, supervisor of the school health program in the Michigan Department of Health. Nichols and others point out that while committee members may not agree on every issue, once they reach a decision, the committees generally stand behind it, and even when challenged. This solid backing, Nichols notes, provides protection for teachers. Encourage parental involvement. Advisory committees have the additional advantage of encouraging parents to become more involved in the development and implementation of sexuality education courses. In contrast, merely giving parents the option of taking their children out in sexuality education classes provides no such opportunities for parents' active engagement. Gerald Newberry, Executive Director of the National Health Information Network at the National Education Association and former head of family life education in Fairfax County, Virginia, observes an opt-out program doesn't make parents more comfortable and knowledgeable. Newberry and others suggest that teachers hold information sessions early in the school year to give parents an opportunity to learn about the curriculum and to review materials that will be used in the course. In a novel approach to this issue, Washington State permits parents to remove their child from mandated AIDS education classes, but only after parents have attended a program offered by the school district on weekends and evenings to review the curriculum and to meet with a teacher. Promote benefits of comprehensive programs. On a broader level, sex education advocates believe that continuing to make the case for comprehensive programs is critical. Our message, declares Planned Parenthood's McGee, has to be that it is immoral to deprive people of information that can save lives and promote health. Just Say No campaigns clearly do not provide such information. These are abstinence-only campaigns. Despite the current momentum of abstinence-only movement, there is reason for optimism that more comprehensive programs will prevail. In several California communities, for example, parents and teachers have successfully opposed efforts by conservative anti-sex education school board members to implement abstinence-only curricula or otherwise undermine sex education. In Hemet, for example, the school board was forced to back down from its abstinence-only approach to AIDS education after parents and teachers sued the school system. Similarly, parents' protests stopped the school board in Ventura County from proceeding with its plan to bar HIV instruction training for teachers. There was a huge backlash, reports Superintendent Charles Weiss. It was like awakening a sleeping giant. The defeat of conservative incumbents sent a clear message to the extreme right that they could not fulfill their agenda and stay on the school board. Now we're going to talk about effective sex education, what has been proven to be effective sex education. Each year, U.S. teens experience as many as 850,000 pregnancies, and youth under the age of 25 experience about 9.1 million sexually transmitted infections, or STIs. By the age of 18, 70% of U.S. females and 62% of U.S. males have initiated vaginal sex. Comprehensive sex education is effective at assisting young people to make healthy decisions about sex and to adopt healthy sexual behaviors. No abstinence only until marriage program has been shown to help teens delay the initiation of sex or to protect themselves when they do initiate sex. Yet the U.S. government has spent over $1 billion supporting abstinence-only until marriage programs. Although the U.S. government ignores it, adolescents have a fundamental human right to accurate and comprehensive sex health information. Comprehensive sex education is effective and does not promote sexual risk. Research has identified highly effective sex education and HIV prevention programs that affect multiple behaviors and achieve positive health impacts. Behavioral outcomes have included delaying the initiation of sex, as well as reducing the frequency of sex, the number of new partners, and the incidence of unprotected sex, or the increasing and has increased the use of condoms and contraception among sexually active participants. Long-term impacts have included lower STI and pregnancy rates. No highly effective sex education or HIV prevention education program is eligible for federal funding because mandates prohibit educating youth about the benefits of condoms and contraception. Evaluations of comprehensive sex education, HIV, and STI prevention programs show that they do not increase rates of sexual initiation, do not lower the age at which youth initiate sex, and do not increase the frequency of sex or the number of sex partners among the sexually active youth. In 1991 and 2004, the U.S. teen birth rate fell from 62 to 41 per 1,000 female teens. Some experts attribute the 75% of the decline to increased contraceptive use and 25% to delayed initiation of sex. Others credit increased contraceptive use and delayed initiation of sex about equally. Regardless, contraceptive use has been critical in reducing teenage pregnancy. Abstinence-only programs are dangerous, ineffective, and inaccurate. The Society for Adolescent Medicine recently declared that abstinence-only programs threaten fundamental human rights to health, information, and life. According to Columbia University researchers, virginity pledge programs increase pledge takers' risk for STIs in pregnancy. The study concluded that 88% of pledge takers initiated sex prior to marriage, even though some delayed sex for a while. Rates of STI among pledge takers and non-pledge takers were similar, even though pledge takers initiated sex later. Pledge takers were less likely to seek STI testing and less likely to use contraception when they did have sex. Evaluation of the effectiveness of state-funded abstinence only until marriage programs found no delay in the first act of sexual contact. In fact, of six evaluations that assessed short-term changes in behavior, three found no changes, two found increased sexual activity from pre to post-test, and one showed mixed results. Five evaluations looked for but found no long-term impact in reducing teens' sexual activity. Analysis of the data from youth risk behavior surveys found that sexual activity among high school youth declined significantly from 1991 to 1997 prior to large-scale funding of abstinence only until marriage program, but changed little from 1999 to 2003 with federal funding of such programs. Analysis of federally funded abstinence only curricula found that over 80% of the curricula supported by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services contained false or distorted information about reproductive health. Specifically, they conveyed false information about the effectiveness of contraceptives, false information about the risk of abortion, religious beliefs as scientific fact, stereotypes about boys and girls as scientific fact, and medical and scientific errors as fact. Medical organizations, parents, and public support conferences, and parents and the public support conference of sex education, the American Academy of Pediatrics, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, American Medical Association, American Public Health Association, Institute of Medicine, the Society for Adolescent Medicine, among others, support comprehensive sex education, including education about both abstinence and also contraceptive and condoms. In one study, most American adults supported sex education that includes information about both abstinence and also contraception and condoms. In fact, 89% believe that this was important for young people to have information about contraception and prevention of STIs, and that sex education should focus on how to avoid unintended pregnancy and STIs, including HIV. In another recent survey, 94% of adults and 93% of parents said that sex education should cover contraception. Only 15% of Americans wanted abstinence-only education taught in the classroom. Characteristics of effective sex education. Experts have identified critical characteristics of highly effective sex education, HIV, and STI prevention education programs. Such programs offer age and culturally appropriate sexual health information in a safe environment for participants, are developed in cooperation with members of the target community, especially the young people, assist youth in clarifying their individual, family, and community values, assist youth in developing skills in communication, refusal, and negotiation, provide medically accurate information about both abstinence and also contraception, including condoms, have clear goals for preventing HIV and other STIs or teen pregnancy, focus on specific health behaviors related to goals with clear messages about these behaviors, address psychological risk and protective factors with activities to change each targeted risk and to promote each protective factor, reflect community values and respond to community needs, rely on participatory teaching methods implemented by trained educators and using all the activities as designed. So that sums up the article that I pulled up from the Guttmacher Institute, and now we're just going to debrief a little bit with what Pamela sent me with her opinion on sex education, and then I go through her opinion, I'll just offer mine. Pamela's opinion is that sex education is indeed important and that it should be taught in schools, but that sex education in regards to sexuality and intercourse, contraception, things like that, should not be taught as early as some schools have instituted. And so this is not necessary. So sex education, what I believe Pamela would support, is that puberty, teaching about puberty and things like that, is much different than, they can both be classified as sex education, but I think that puberty is probably good to teach at a younger age so that children know what to expect to happen to them as they go through the fun and awkward stages of puberty. But I definitely do agree with Pamela that intercourse, contraception, and things like that should not be taught to necessarily elementary or middle school students, or at least not till late middle school or early high school. So what my opinion is that I agree mainly with the article that sexual education is really, really important. Definitely do not support abstinence-only education. And I think the main reason that is because I grew up with sex education being taught, with having resources to learning about STIs, how to prevent STIs, how to prevent HIV, how to prevent pregnancy, the different types of contraception you can use. And I think it really grounds young people, especially when they're old enough to understand it. When you're taught abstinence only, I feel like you're not really being given, you're not really being given all the information about what it means to have a sexual relationship with somebody else. And I think that, like I said, the comprehensive programs really ground you into understanding the responsibility of having sexual relations, what it means, what the risks are psychologically and health-wise. My program, the school that I went to, the Academy of Allied Health and Science, did a really good job at teaching all the different angles of sex and sexuality through not only health materials, but also through what psychologically it means to commit yourself to somebody, to have sex, and things like that. And I really think that it makes students think more about sex in a more responsible way, because you're more exposed to information about sex, about STIs, about the different risks associated with different contraception methods, different risks associated with having risky intercourse, protected sex. And I think that it's really important for students to be exposed to this, because I think it actually, at least for me, I think it's helped me to delay that process of being sexually, it's helped me to not want to be sexually active until I'm ready. And I think that's what parents want. They want their children to be able to form their own moral values with all the information that they receive. And I think that the more comprehensive programs allow students to do this, to take that information and decide for themselves, am I ready for this huge commitment? Am I ready for all the risk that I could have? Am I ready for pregnancy if something should happen? And those are the questions that my classmates think about. If we get pregnant, are we ready for that? If not, then maybe we shouldn't be having intercourse, even if you are on contraceptive. So I really think that these programs offer a great amount of information. I do not think in any way that they promote sexual intercourse. If anything, I think that they give the students enough information to be informed enough to be comfortable with saying, I don't want to have sex yet, or I don't want to have sex till I'm married and I'm in a committed relationship and I feel comfortable that if should anything happen, that I'm with somebody that I love and it's going to be okay. Or on the opposite side, it can make someone feel comfortable, okay, I want to have, intercourse before I'm married, but I know how to protect myself and I know how to not put myself in risky situations to be hurt emotionally or to be hurt physically. And so I think it helps students form their own values given information that the class is taught. And I think that's one of the most important things that, like we talked about with the Darwin versus intelligent design debate, that I think one of the most important things that school can provide for people is information. And the values that you form should not be influenced by this information, but you should have exposure to all this information so that you can make these. You can establish your values. I do apologize. Trying to make a point and coughing away. But I do think that, like I said, the most important thing is to expose people who are able, people who are able to understand, like I said before, you know, these programs should be age appropriate. So I think it's important to expose people to information that is appropriate for their age. So that way, when they make the decision to act on this information, they have all the facts and everything they need to be protected and safe and psychologically sound when they do make a decision to have sex or not have sex. And so that's my take on it. And of course, you know, it's up to the parents to decide what's, you know, right for their children, but I strongly encourage parents to, like I did with the Darwin debate, to expose their children to as much information that is age appropriate for them, so that way that when they are trying to make a decision, for example, in this case, should I not have sex, they know all the information that they need to know, that if they're going to have sex or not going to have sex, they feel comfortable in that. So they're not uncomfortable in the sense because they don't know how to protect themselves, or they don't know the risk of STI infection, or they don't know how to get testing. So I don't think parents would ever want their children to be in a situation where they don't know what decision they should make. And I think that these programs really help students and children to be, not children, but young adults, to be very comfortable in the decisions that they make in regards to sexuality and sexual intercourse. And so I strongly encourage parents to participate in their school district to find out what these programs are teaching, to talk to your children. If your children do attend public schools or charter schools, ask them what they're learning in class, in their health class, because it is really important for life. And I think that a lot of times it just gets overlooked as, oh, just the health class that I have to pass, but it's something that I found has been very, very important for me. And so I strongly encourage parents to get involved with their school, find out what they're teaching in this respect, and to talk to their children about it and have this open discussion with them. What are they comfortable with learning? What are they comfortable with the teaching at the school? And so that's my 2 cents, and I thank the audience again for bearing with me through my sickness. I hope someday that I won't be sick anymore. No one can only hope. Next week, Thanksgiving, I won't be here, but I do hope that you have a great, great Thanksgiving to everybody in the audience, and we'll pick up again the week after Thanksgiving. Thank you again so much for listening, and have a great weekend.